Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway,
a podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. You know, that small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, though, I want to mention our monthly guidebook workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. And if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit the subscribe link in the header menu, and you'll be good to go.
That being said, let's trek further down the path of
floodgates.
Floodgates.
Yeah. It's
where's
actually
the dam?
That's Bill Gates' daughter, actually.
Oh yeah. I mean, if he was like a rapper or something or an actor, he would probably name her Flood or some shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Some whack out name. Whenever I get mad at my PCs, I'm always like, fucking Bill Gates. He makes a better door than Windows.
I mean he seems to give a lot of his money to charity. It doesn't seem like such a
bad
guy. I
just fucking hate Windows.
I'm with you. So our economy is based on supply and demand, right? And there are many times this actually works like it should. Like in our case, at My Music Masterclass, we supply musicians with masterclass videos from badass cats from all over the world because there's a demand for it, right? There's a demand of musicians that want to learn from, you know, their heroes or whatnot. And we provide that, you know, without doing the basic guitar lesson stuff or the basic music stuff. We try to cater to a more serious demographic, and that is you. Now, if in the future people stop wanting to purchase from us, the demand is gone, right? And so the supply will die down. I mean, we wouldn't be able to survive. It's especially true also with our model because we give the musicians the majority of the proceeds, which we've said before on this podcast and on the site. And so we don't have a lot of wiggle room, you know, like some evil corporations like E-Corp have.
Does E stand for evil?
Well, and Mr. Robot, you never watched that?
I mean, I never finished it and it's been like years.
Dude, it's awesome. Anyway, this is one of the biggest problems we face as working musicians. You know, there's a much bigger supply of musicians than there is a demand. And this is pre-COVID I'm talking about. And this is, you know, all the stuff you hear with musicians saying, you know, the gig doesn't pay well, or we were treated like shit, or like I think in the last podcast we talked about with the Super Bowl thing, I think, where I think some of the musicians had to pay for their flights to play with The Weeknd, yeah, or someone like that.
Because they're just like, we'll just get whoever to play.
Yeah, because that's
three chords.
That literally is supply and demand. I mean, those people don't want to do it. They know they can get someone else. Is it the right thing to do? No, but it is capitalism and it is supply and demand. And they can get someone else to do it. They don't need like that exact person because they're literally playing parts and a lot of people can do that. A new crop every year, matter of fact.
I mean, the hard part about that whole world, though, is like, can you do it at that level?
I agree.
Like, music's easy for the most part. And fucking, you know, Chick Corea is not playing the fucking Super Bowl, you know, nor will that music ever be played at the Super Bowl.
But, you know, as we know, I've done a lot of gigs in the pop world, as has Jake. And I've done auditions, you know, as a bass player who's played in, you know, a lot of different genres myself. And I've done some pop auditions where literally I did an audition and they had bass in the monitor, like of the track that I was playing too. And I'm like, wow, they really don't care what I sound like if they're just, I'm playing over a bass line. You know what I mean? Like, so there are certain gigs that even though you are a talented player and you might get chosen for the gig, the gig doesn't...
Sure, it wasn't the LSD that I gave you before.
Exactly. Yeah. The gig doesn't always require that you play anything but the parts, and maybe you do a little more, you know, and you have to have good time and good, you know, but the thing is that there's a lot of players that can play those parts, and, you know, which is why we talked on the last podcast, I think, or the one before, whatever, one of these last few, about, you know, getting your skill set together so you're less replaceable, you know, I mean, and also different gigs require different skills, like wrestling.
I mean, honestly, it reminds me of, like, this is, you know, we're a company in New York, but like the actual manufacturing is made in China. You know, it's like, why the fuck do they need someone in the States that's going to charge top dollar? You know what I mean? It's like my sister just found out recently that her like Dutch oven that she only bought because she thought it was made in the USA.
Dutch oven?
If you actually look at the thing, it was freaking, it's made in China. And she's so pissed because she was like, you should buy this one. It's made in the States. And I looked it up on Amazon and everybody was so mad.
Right.
That it was made in China. They were like, the only reason I bought this, but it's true. It's like, why are you gonna, you know, go like get some badass New York giant manufacturer, like boutique shit, to just do something that like a huge warehouse in China can do for way cheaper? You know,
it happens all the time. I mean,
it's capitalism.
It is capitalism. And it's also, I mean, I want to talk about the unions in a minute, but I mean, this is also why some orchestras, or I mean, some people go to the Czech Republic or other countries to hire orchestras because they don't want to pay union fees. It's crazy. I mean, and it's
that's a lot of money too.
It is, but it's also what happened. If you look up like what happened with Bethlehem Steel, you know, in in the steel industry.
Man, I went there. I love that place.
Yeah, but yeah, I know. I played it too. We opened for Steely Dan.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit, man. I didn't know you were there. Oh, it's one of my favorite venues.
Yeah, with Sam Yehel. We did that gig with Steely Dan. I grew up in Jersey originally, and we knew about Bethlehem and what happened, and like it didn't get revived.
Half the country.
Yeah, for a long time. Like that
Golden State Bridge, like fucking
but like agree.
Half of New York.
But what happened was with them was that they were producing steel for everyone, and then it turned out that I think it was Japan. You know, you have to fact check me on this if you want. But I believe that people were able to get Japanese steel shipped on ships for cheaper than we could make it in Bethlehem Steel, or that we would, you know, that the people would make it there for. And it put them out of business. I mean, I think that's insane that you could make steel somewhere and ship it on a barge
that far away
through customs and like all the import taxes and everything. And it's still like a hell of a lot cheaper. Anyway, that's what happened. But let's move on. Just a little more about this before we break it into the whole music thing. I mean, when you see employees picketing outside of a superstore, like I don't even want to name one because like, you know, I don't know who's in trouble at the moment. But, you know, when people are on strike and letting, you know, and they're letting the world know about the issues they're having with pay or healthcare or treatment, you know, it's a big statement, right? And anyone that goes to work in that strike, that crosses that picket line, is called a scab, right? Which is derogatory. It's got a bad connotation, and you don't want to be a scab typically, you know? Yeah.
I mean, like bass player, you know, it's got the same kind of.
Now, what the fuck? I almost like just went right by that, and now I'm mad. All right. Anyway, I'll get you back. But anyway, like a strike is organized and it's a way to tell a company or the government, if you're striking, you know, for a government, a federal cause or something like that, you know, like the post office has gone on strike, a lot of whatever, it doesn't matter. It means you want to be treated more fairly, right? And it's your leverage.
Yeah, you're letting people know.
Yeah, and it's the only way.
This is a problem.
Yeah, and apparently talks have broken down, and it's your way to leverage the situation. You're like, I'm not working, and no one is going to work until we settle out this difference. All right?
It always sucks that it can get to that point. It's just like they obviously just don't care. Like no one's listening in the company, so you got to blow it out and make it a thing. Usually all they want to do is have talks and like discuss shit. Like, I just want things to change, you know? It's so depressing that it always has to come to that.
Yeah. And this is kind of where I want to bring it back to music, because we as musicians don't really have that kind of leverage. We don't have any kind of organized or unionized protests that we can do or that we have done. We do have music unions, but many of us are not a part of them. I mean, typically the only people that benefit from them are people that do work for television or film, like the session players, the Broadway musicians, orchestras and stuff like that. But like the normal person doing gigs, even playing with huge artists, like never touches a music union. And you know, if you do television stuff, like you're on a talk show or blah, 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 like, yeah, there's union stuff. But again, we don't have that kind of organization that comes with, you know, everyone saying like, we're not getting paid fairly. Possible. No, right.
You know what I mean? It's like people don't even give a shit that we exist until if we just didn't exist and there's no way to make that happen.
Yeah. So if you're playing with an artist and getting paid super shitty and like they're terrible to you or their management is horrible and you're treated poorly, like you can just quit and tell everyone and tell the world how terrible it is. And someone else is going to take your place that day probably. And if it's a well-known artist, like they'll come right to it. There'll be some young crop that'll, you know, some people that'll come in and they won't be considered a scab. That's kind of what I'm getting to. It's like, yeah, there's no bad connotation for taking, for being
considered good business.
Yeah. For
good job.
Yeah. For the next person taking the gig, like they're never considered like, yeah, oh, that person sucks. That was like, whatever, dude, you know, like sloppy, yeah, we're seconds, to prove a point, you know what I mean? Like,
fucking,
yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. I mean, you're just a person that got the gig and, you know, you're probably super psyched to have it and everyone will congratulate, yeah, you.
For you don't even know that happened at all.
No,
like, you're not even aware of it.
Right. You know, when Ruslan, when we talked about Ruslan Sirota and his post about the Super Bowl and when he was talking about what he did, I don't know if I brought this up in that episode, but he said that when he played with Josh Groban, it paid a lot better than, you know, for instance, The Weeknd or Britney Spears or anyone that's a pop artist, Katy Perry or something like that. Because, and not that though, I don't know that the specific pay of those groups, so don't get me wrong, like Katy Perry might treat her band awesome and pay them really well. I don't know that band. But what I'm saying is that when you get to like more of the general pop gigs that you're playing the tracks and stuff like that, it typically varies. It's very, very dependent on the management and sometimes the artist has very little to do with it. But with Josh Groban, basically it was a classical piano gig almost. It was like him and Ruslan a lot of the times, you know, and yeah, it's very difficult. And it's the kind of gig that, you know, he was saying like maybe a few people in LA could pull that off because there's so many different styles in it. And, that makes you really in demand if it's something that no one else can do. So he got paid probably a million times more than he would get paid for a general pop gig. And he's done a lot. I mean, who else did he play with? Plus, Seal?
That's a very high, like high, yeah, feeling gig for Josh, yeah, himself.
Right.
Like if he doesn't feel some sort of connection to that piano, he's, yeah, not going to sing like an Angelic Groban.
Right.
But we need that Angelic Groban.
But you know, Ruslan has played with Seal. He's played with Stanley Clarke. Yeah. He's played with a lot of people. So, I mean, and those are two opposing gigs as well. You know what I mean? Like one is a fusion gig essentially, or jazz fusion. And then the other was a pop gig when, you know, at the time.
I mean, it's a master level gig.
There are, but a lot of times it has to do with what type of gig, what are you required to do on that gig? And sometimes you could be a person that can shred and can do all the shit, but like on that gig, you're not supposed to, you know? So like, yeah, does it really matter that you can play all this crazy stuff when you really have to play the parts, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, it has to sound fucking beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Jake, and we've talked about this with Andrew Goucher when he talked about playing with Prince. It's like, what'd you do? Yeah. He's like, I played the parts. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. He was like, I've been listening to those parts my whole life. Like, yeah. I love that shit.
Yeah.
He's and like, then, you know, obviously he would allow him some fun. And obviously Goucher can handle that
some stretching,
shit, but he can, yeah, he knows like where those boundaries are because he knows the music too. You know, that's, yeah, that's another thing, like know the artist, what they're trying to go for.
Yeah. It's like Eddie Brown says, what do you say? You can, music's like a rubber band. You can stretch, but if you stretch, yeah, too hard and you break it, you know what I mean? Like you don't want to stretch, yeah, too much because then it just breaks and then the song's gone, you know? So anyway.
Exactly.
Let's go to modern day. Now there's COVID and the supply has dried up even more than it was, right? Which sucks. And musicians are freaking out. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel because it seems that restaurants and local gigs have started to peek their heads out, right? So they're coming out.
Yeah, like small town, like restaurant stuff. So not so much like industry cities. But that's the thing I always make sure people understand. Like
cafes and stuff, you mean?
Yeah, like if you want to be a professional musician and go get Andrew Goucher's gig, then you got to come to New York, you got to come to LA, you got to come to fucking somewhere that has like heavy industry. But honestly, like your hometown friends, wherever they are probably going to be making more money than you more consistently in their small town
right now,
playing fucking blues and ripping solos all night and having a blast playing just at restaurants. They'll do like everyone that I know back east and what I was doing for years. We just play all the restaurants and the small venues and like their breweries, whatever. But like you do that every fucking night, you get, you know, 50 to like 250 a night and you're fucking golden. Like that's, but you're never going to fucking go play for, you know, a stadium. So it's just that thing. So
yeah.
they're opening up first basically is what's going on.
It's also not so cut and dry because the, even if you didn't get paid $250, like your rent is less. Like if you live even a smaller city, like a really small city, or you know, not one that's not New York and LA, you know, there are obviously expensive cities. Like San Francisco is more expensive than most, but there's plenty of little cool cities around that are cheaper. And there's scenes in lots of smaller places. Like you could live
it's way better than an industry city.
Yeah. Well, like, in that case, or like we did one, like webinar Q&A, just Jake and I talking to whoever wanted to talk about, you know, their careers. And, we might do that again. I don't know. That was kind of fun. But, one of the guys on the, that came to it was talking about how he was on a cruise ship for, I don't know, what was it, 9-10 months out of a year? You know, something crazy.
Yeah.
And so he didn't really
have bread and butter, man.
Yeah, it was his bread and butter. And like he didn't really have to pay rent, I don't think, anywhere, right? Was that it? Like he just had a place?
He probably had a place he kept, but he probably didn't really need it, to be honest. Like you can, you know.
Yeah. So like that kind of thing is he probably made a bunch of money because you didn't spend it, you know? I mean, you can probably get free drinks on the boat, I'm sure. And like, I mean, I'm not sure, but I hope. You know,
I mean, I always tell people, like, if your goal is to be your own artist and be in a band or even just be a solo artist, like there is no reason you should be moving to a giant city, because then you're just going to have to work 24/7 to even just live there. And, you know, that cuts down all your creativity time and stuff like that. Once you like have a product and you are an artist, then you could start thinking about like going to a city and showcasing that. But like, man, if you're going to be in a fucking band, stay in your fucking town or just move to like a small normal town, play restaurants, work at a cafe like part time.
Just keep your expenses low.
That's what I'm saying. Like, because as soon as you move to a big city, you're just every moment you're just worrying about how not to be homeless.
Yeah. And when you're ready for that, like that's what you have to do. So that is the step you need to take. You need to be like, all right, I have exhausted my opportunities in this smaller fish bowl and I need to go to the bigger fish tank, you know, or the ocean.
You have something to bring to the fish tank.
Yeah. And then you're the badass, you know, new musician on the block, as opposed to like learning on the scene, which is really tricky to do in New York. I mean, you really kind of, it's like, what did Mike say? Mike Moreno kind of said it really well on the episode. We did the podcast with him and he said that
Mike was already a beast by the time he gets to college.
Right. And that's what he says to people.
People don't realize that.
They say that he said that he tells people that you need to learn how to play it like before you get to college, and then you can hone what you're doing there. And but you really should be good by the time you get to college, because otherwise you're not really getting the most out of the experience. Because people,
I mean, if you,
it's not like
you
a
meet
normal,
someone, you go play with them.
Yeah, you know? And it's not like a normal. I don't know if I'm a musician and I went to music school, obviously, so I don't know. But I would assume that, you know, if you go for law, that you're learning a lot about law and you want to be a lawyer. And with music, you obviously learn about music, but you're definitely not starting from the beginning. And maybe people that are going to law school, they don't know a lot about law before they get there.
Gets you a fucking job, because there are jobs. There's no jobs in music. You know what I mean? We're musicians. Like, if you go to law school, you get A's, you're going to get a fucking job, period. That's why, like, if you don't go to music school to like learn quote unquote music, you go to music school to like play and get relationships. That way you have a better chance of getting paid work.
And also it's good to set your roots somewhere. I mean, if you're not in a, like when I went to school, I went to Manhattan School of Music because I wanted to, you know, I was in Jersey and I wanted to make the move to New York. it was easy for me. Well, I was a bass player. That helps. And also, I had gigs in Jersey, which is right there, you know. So,
yeah.
And I had a car at the beginning. So,
oh, that's badass.
So I was actually able to, and that's why I didn't finish school, because I was gigging. But, you know, at the same time, like, it's easy when you still have work in Jersey to pay your bills. Like, you know,
yeah, you had like your toe still in like that city.
So as I was getting work in New York, I could still take those gigs and just drive 30 minutes out of New York, you know, or 40 minutes out and take them and still make my rent. And of course, at that point, my rent was cheap and I had no expenses except for I had a really shitty used car and I was, you know, just eating rice and beans, you know, whatever. So to kind of go back into this whole perspective, we can't only think of everything through our lenses. I guess that's the best way to put it. You know, many musicians get in the habit of thinking that everyone is out to screw them, and they get and they're getting treated badly by people who are making all the money, right? So like, yeah. There's like these figures that have all everything, like there's the cartoon of like this greedy.
Definitely happens.
Yeah. No, and you know, that definitely happens, of course. But like, it's not always the case. Now, in some cases, it's obviously true, right? So if you're playing with the famous pop act and you're getting paid shittily, and you're right, that sucks. And the person at the top, you know, whoever it is, like Ariana Grande or whoever it is. And, you know, again, I'm not saying that she pays shittily. I don't even know her. But if you'd assume that the star would be getting money and you're not. And
I need at least a grande a week.
Exactly.
For these gigs.
Oh, I hope more than that. Jeez. It better be more than a grande.
Yeah, but it wouldn't work any other way. I can't say two grande.
You could. You could. That would work.
I guess I could.
Yeah.
Damn.
Anyway.
I lowballed my own joke.
But again, I know. But again, this is what we said with the whole thing before about Russlin and when he was talking about The Weeknd and the Super Bowl. This is supply and demand. And in this case, though, with local gigs that we're kind of talking about now, when things are opening up, we have cafes, we have bars, we have like the smaller jazz clubs or even the bigger jazz clubs that are opening. We need to realize that these restaurants and bars have been taking a massive hit in this last year. And the money probably won't be the same for the musicians until the whole system proves to work the way it used to. That means that people need to come out to hear the live music, and they need to pay for things at whatever establishment this is. And if that happens, well, let me say, if that doesn't happen, music won't be prioritized, right? So we need to work with the business owners and have compassion for the whole process. And I'm not sure what that means exactly, but I would think that there'd be some kind of negotiation and feeling out phase. And, you know,
there's different levels too. Like,
yeah,
know where you're playing. If you're playing at like the fucking Blue Note, that's a company that makes their money from music. Like, it's a music venue. If you're but more like restaurants, like places that basically they could go on without music.
Or a bar.
It's not like the whole reason why they exist. Yeah. Because like, you're going to see right now, I've already started to see it. Right now is like the bait, kind of like the restaurants have to bait people back in. So you'll start seeing like, okay, drinks are half off with food. If you get food, like just come back basically is what you're going to see a lot with restaurants or restaurants/venues. So like, they're scared shitless right now. They're scared no one's going to come back. They're scared they're going to be a hub of COVID where they open and it gets too busy and everyone dies.
Yeah, super spreader.
They're just, it's a scary process right now for them. So you have to just remember, like, they don't know your world. Like, they might open up their booking and be like, hey, we're going to start taking musicians back. And then they're just going to get flooded with phone calls and it's going to get chaotic. So that's kind of what we're talking about, like this process.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be cool, we need to be patient, and we need to understand both sides of the fence, right? So we as musicians should want to help build the audiences up at these venues to help get them back on their feet so that like we can get back on our feet too. Now, it's a symbiotic relationship. And you know, we've talked to Bruce Foreman, said it the best when we talked to him on a podcast which you should always check out, or you should check out if you haven't heard it. It's really, really good. And he talks about how us musicians, or we musicians, need to start doing more of our own gigs, meaning that we need to book, what was it, house parties. I mean, house shows, right? House concerts, things like that, like renting out our own venues, doing things like that, not just being employed by a bar or a restaurant or someone who has a lease. Yeah. And, you know, if we're complaining about the pay or blah, 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 if we're the ones that are responsible for bringing people to an establishment, well, why don't we make our own establishment? Now, that is always possible.
That's all still there.
It's all still there. But what
you could also still do that, like benchmarking kind of off of a venue right now. You can create a vibe. You can be a part of like that. That's another thing that like might start happening is you might get like a different sort of cross promotion. Like usually when you book a venue or whatever, like you do your promotion, like you know, the club does theirs, you do yours. But I feel like we might be entering a little random phase of like you work together in a different way and almost like create a vibe for your music. Like almost like, you know, we're borrowing the venue tonight. And we're going to make it almost like we would make a live stream because that's what people have been doing for a year. So I don't know. There might be like talk to these people and be like, how do we do this? You know, should I like personally invite people? Should we live stream it? Should we like what, you know, just it's going to be, I think some new shit's going to come out of all this process.
Yeah. And
but be polite, you know, work with them.
And now like more than ever, the whole thing with the venue saying you guys need to bring people to the club, and then the musicians being like, well, you know, we're playing for this, or we're playing for free, or we're playing for less money than we want. Like we have to see this through a new lens now. I mean,
it was already a broken relationship.
Yeah,
it was
already a broken relationship, and now it's really like, I mean, I've talked to musicians where. We just talked to Will Vincent, actually, and he talked about being an alto player and that, you know, the first musicians to be called are like a drummer and a bass player and like either a guitarist or pianist. And then maybe a horn. If there's a horn, it would be a tenor. Like, so there's, you know, and it's the same with this is even further. If you want to take that like zoomed out, you can say that like a restaurant needs to make money off of its food and drinks. And then like, if the music is helping, then like that's added to it at this point. So you have to be a solution, you know, and you have to be cool. Now, granted, if you don't want to be taken advantage of, so this is just obvious. And if there's an owner of a club that is screwing you or, you know, don't stand for it. And don't play for free if there's money to be had. Like, I remember seeing this thing that Berkeley posted in their gig board or whatever it is. And
no idea.
No, they had something.
You have to pay $20 million to be a part of it.
No, I mean, when you go to school, there's this like board of like, you know, it's like in their whatever. I don't know. It used to be magazines or newsletters, but now it's like a digital thing, right? Yeah. So. And I remember they had, it was like the Sheraton downtown or something like that, or whatever it was, right near like the Boston Commons. Or was it was something like that. It was either a Sheraton or a Hyatt, or it was some like, you know, legit like hotel that costs like $350 a night to be in, you know.
The Selma Hyatt.
It was like right near the Commons. I swear to God, it was like, you know, or... Yeah, it wasn't even in Back Bay. It's either in Back Bay or like right downtown. Anyway. Yeah,
this shit's all expensive.
My point is that like they posted this thing and they said they wanted musicians to play for like college credit. You know what I mean? It was like no pay, you know, but you know, you can do college credit for it or something like that. Like they were trying to work something out with a school. And I was thinking,
yeah, that's cool.
And I was thinking,
we already paid $40 billion to go to Berkeley to get college credits.
Right. And I was thinking like, okay, well, sure. Why don't you give me a free $350 room, you know, and then we'll call it even, you know? But I mean, the point is that if there were people that said no, if enough people said, no, we won't do it, then they would have to pay people. Also, like, they clearly don't care what level musicians they're getting. They just want someone. So they might not care. They might just be like, we'll just take, you know, the worst of the crop of Berkeley and allow them to play because they're going to play so low, no one cares. And it looks like we have musicians here. So like we honestly, so in that case, there's not much you can negotiate. You just don't do the gig. But the point is like, if we as musicians, we need to stand up for our rights in general and not be taken advantage of. That being said, that's not really what we're talking about here. We need to help our local businesses get back on their feet so that they can see that we're helpful and not just like loud and pissing customers off. You know what I mean?
Which in some cases, maybe they're right.
Well, sometimes, you know, there are times where people are trying to eat at like a restaurant and then, you know, there's like a trumpet player blaring or like a drummer super loud and, you know, it's not appreciated. But oftentimes,
go right up to the person's ear, tequila.
I know. But oftentimes, you know, most people should know that there's live music at that venue and they should expect it and hopefully want it, you know. But we have to, you know, do our part as well. I think that's what we're trying
to say. I mean, that shit's all on the club owners too. And that's kind of what I'm talking about is like everything in that world needs to get better. Like you need to understand like what to book in your own restaurant venue, what gear you should sort of be seeing. Like, cause some singer-songwriters will like bring way too much gear and it's way too loud and they're like strumming the acoustic guitar like crazy. And it's not very nice. You know, it's like, that's like forcing music on people that are trying to eat. I mean, there's so many, we could, when we talk to a like a restaurant owner or a music venue owner, we can talk about all that stuff, but like we just, everything sort of needs to get better. So this was like a reset, I think. But now it's time to like start fixing some shit because we get to go from the ground up now.
Yeah, and then when we're talking about, there's obviously many different kind of gigs. If we're talking about clubs and venues, like they're ready for, there's a sound person there and they are ready for whatever. They'll probably tell you to keep your sound not too crazy loud on stage so that they can mix it or, you know, all the obvious stuff that they say. But I mean, that's different. That's a music venue and people likely won't go to those venues. I mean, they're probably dead if there's no music because they're really built for that, you know?
Exactly.
We're talking about, you know, the coffee house,
the cross between.
Yeah. Those gigs that are cool to do, you know, fun things to do. You can play some, try out some new material, get paid, get some good dinner and those gigs that kind of help the local scenes.
I mean, honestly, dude, when you meet like restaurant owners, you can always sort of drag out of them the fact that like when they open their business, always in the back of their mind, they're like, oh, I want to have music someday. Like that's always part of the dream. Like we are still very cool. Like our world is cool to most people. And like when people go into a business venture in that world, honestly, like they want us to be there. So it's that relationship I don't think should ever stale. And right. I think like the in-between music venue and just straight up restaurant, like that crossover restaurant kind of bar venue thing, that's like what's going to keep everybody alive to be able to follow their dreams as musicians. Like that's my whole thing. That's something that needs to be so strong. And I think right now we can strengthen that stuff because, you know, everyone's seen it the past year is you have like all the restaurants that your friends would play at. They were trying to do like takeout and they were trying to like be good for everybody. Like they're following all the rules. They're wearing their masks. They're making posts and they're like, you know, let's just get through this. Let's get through this. And then all the people that would play those venues would be doing live streams. And like, it was funny. Like you would see the same people that would be at the restaurant listening to them. They'd come to the live streams. So it's like this whole, everything was on pause and sort of like, I can't wait till we can go do this at this restaurant again and go back to like our fun Friday night or our fun Tuesday night. So like that's a big thing. Like it's small potatoes, quote unquote, but that's like the bread and butter and blood of like an artist's life. So that's kind of what we're talking about. Let's protect that and let's work together and make this shit happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing to realize is that there's going to be a ton of people trying to get gigs at the same time, as soon as the floodgates, which is the name of this episode, opens, right? Yeah. So whatever venues are remaining, right, left standing, are going to get a lot of calls or emails or texts or whatever because there are a bunch of musicians stir crazy, maybe completely crazy at this point, and they need money, and they're going to be hunting
they're
down.
They're shaken, not stirred.
Exactly. Shaken, not stirred. And you know, and they have to be patient. Like, all of us musicians have to be patient, and we definitely have to reach out to these venues and try to get in, but it's going to be tricky. So we have to be cool and not be pissed off that there's not like more money or, I mean, we're going to have to negotiate this thing and try to work with good people and try to get everything moving.
And double check your dates. Like, you know, start the conversation with, hey, like, I'm so glad to hear your voice again. Like, what do we have? Like, how crazy is it right now? Are you going to start doing like two or three artists a night? Or are you just jumping back into like our prior arrangement? Like, it, just keep things straight. Make it easy for them. It's the same way like you talk about music licensing. You know, you don't go to a freaking music supervisor and be like, hey, dude, I'm the greatest person ever. Like, here's my music, bro. It should totally be on the next episode of Game of Thrones. Like,
right.
That's just not how you do shit ever in any business.
No.
Like, talk to these people. Make it easy for them.
And you also have to present yourself as a solution. Like, you know, that's exactly. A big thing that I always talk to people about with licensing. It's the same thing. Like, for instance, in licensing, you have this show. I know that you always use this exact type of music. I have that music and it's a very good quality, you know. So here I am to save you time, you know. It's the same with restaurants. If you're just like, I'm the best, we're awesome, it doesn't mean anything to them. It's like, can you bring people there? Are you cool? Like, are you an asshole? I mean, you have to be amenable. Like, are you gonna be too loud? Like, are you supposed to be loud? Maybe you're supposed to be loud. Like, whatever the case is, you have to be right for that venue. Don't just like, no shotgun buckshot approach to this, you know? Yeah. Like, don't just call every venue and be like, you need music? It's like, what do you do? It's like, we're a heavy metal ska band. It's like, well, we're an Italian restaurant. You know what I mean? Like,
plus also, like, dude, I mean, we're ones that always preach, you know, find different avenues of work. Call these motherfuckers and be like, do you need someone to book for you? I'm booking for this restaurant. I'm booking for this. I want to take that load off you guys for the next like 3 months until you guys are back fully running.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be your promoter booker. I have two other places I can do. You know, you could still go play music, but like, why would you not? Like, if you feel like doing that, why not? You know, mm-hmm. Like, that could be amazing to offer that to someone. You might save their ass. Like, there's opportunity. And it's, you know, it's good. It could be a good time.
Yeah. And also you're going to need to figure out how America, I mean, well, if you're an American or wherever you are, how you're
going with this. What is going on right now? Oh, America, where are you going? Where are you going with this shit?
I'm going to here. So no matter where you are, you have to figure out what your country, how they feel about like, going out in public, right? So if you are going out and like, is it important for you to not only be vaccinated, but like tell the club owners that be like, look, my whole band has been vaccinated. Like,
oh, dude, town to town even is going to be different.
But that's what I'm saying. It's different. It depends on your local, your politics, like what's going on in your town, how people react to this stuff. But like, you have to be understanding. You have to be ready to enter an agreement to go in public life, meaning that if you're super scared about COVID even.
Or super polarized in your fucking political belief.
Yeah.
Like, don't bring that shit in. This is not about that.
Yeah. But like, let's say you're really scared about getting it, even if you've been vaccinated, like, and you're at an establishment playing, like someone might just come up drunk and with no mask and be like, hey, what's up? You sound great. And like spitting on you. Like
you sound like Marty McFly.
I know. But like that could happen. I mean, I don't know, but
I mean, that happens anyway. And people get annoyed by it.
Right. It used to happen. That's what I'm saying. Like, so my point is that, you know, you have to be prepared for this. And if you want to go back to this type of work, be ready for what could possibly happen. Yeah. And, you know, so you have to think all this through. So you're not just taken off guard and you don't just like freak out in the middle of the restaurant and be like, dude, get away from me, man. What the fuck? Like, you know, you don't want to cause a scene at someone else's establishment. So like, put all the scenarios in your head and, you know,
be ready.
And if you're, and like, if that's something that you want to talk to the owner about, then you say, look, like, what do I do in this case if someone comes at me without a mask? He or she might say like, like, we're going to have someone that's addressing that and looking and making sure everyone's in compliance. And don't worry, you can just call out to the door guy and or whatever, you know. But that's something you might want to talk about. I don't know.
It's going to continue to be a touchy subject. So, you know, pick your stage banter and your audience talk. Like, just be careful. I mean, I know no one wants to be in the cancel culture like we talked about last episode, but like, you do somewhat have a responsibility. If you're playing venues, you have a live microphone. Don't be like, yeah, look at all you fucking idiots wearing masks. Yeah, Bill Gates is going to chip all of you with the vaccine. Like, just leave that stuff at your house. You know, like, just get work. Let's just try and play by the rules. Let's get the shit back. And no one cares about your political views, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, we're now in this, we've been in this lockdown for, it seems like eternity at this point. And that's one reason we did do an episode on cancel culture, recently. But that's one reason people are so into cancel culture right now. I mean, not into it, and like it's a fad, you know, but like, that's why so much is happening too, is because like, these things are boiling to the top and we don't have that many distractions anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not as if these things weren't important to these same people, but a lot of people have less going on. And that's because of, for obvious reasons, because there's nothing to do. You can't just go out to a movie theater or a restaurant the same way you did. And people aren't working. Some people are out of work. Some people are unhealthy. Yeah. There's a lot of shit going on. So like, all of us are frazzled, and you know, this is not a good time to do something or say something polarizing unless you want, you know, that kind of flood. Yeah. You can listen to the last episode if you want to.
But just keep your priorities. Like, priority number one, let's fix our relationship with venues and restaurants. Let's take this time to like make this bond stronger than it ever was before, because it was already broken. And that if the COVID thing never happened, honestly, people were going to go the live stream house concert thing anyway. Like, that's where we were all going. We were all starting to like turn our backs on venues because it was just getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that was because of, it's just been that way forever. You know, it needed a little, you know, reset.
Yeah.
So that's priority number one. We kind of got our dream, maybe. We just got to take it by the hand now and like figure this out. So now's that chance. Don't fucking blow it.
So we took, like, there was a great flood and we took two bass players and two guitarists on an ark and two trombone players. And
it was a yacht. It was like the guy that owned Spotify. It was his yacht. For whatever reason, he wanted to be cool. He wants to save us. He makes a shit ton of money off of all of us. And then the artists were at like the first level with him.
Yeah, like musicians cleaning his floors, I'm sure.
Because the artists need us. And the Spotify guy needs us because we're in like the engine room, but it's all right. We hitched a ride. We got through the flood.
We're buying his personal shoe shiner or whoever he has.
But don't forget, man, we get more enjoyment out of what we do than those cats. We're on a different level just because we don't get the money that they'd have. We get the real shit that music provides.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, this was a cleaning out or a reset, you know, and you're right.
It was broken.
It was broken. It was so because broken. Musicians were very, you know, pissed off at pretty much the establishment for not being paid. And we're right. Like, I could advocate that a lot of the times, you know, especially with streaming services, I mean, there's no way to put it. We're getting totally screwed. But, you know, so live venues is the way to make money now, or education, or, you know, you have to find another way, right? Now, live... that's gone. So because of COVID, so it's clearly a different situation, and it's one that's
sacked.
It's taxing us, and it's difficult. But you know, we can work this out, and we can help rebuild. But we have to remember that it is a two-way relationship. Like I said, so if you play anywhere, if it's not like if you play at anyone's venue, if it's a restaurant, a subway, like or not the restaurant, like an actual subway. I don't think that the restaurant has music.
Which would be worse. I mean, you could busk outside of a subway.
Be like, dude, I played in the subway. It's like, where'd you play? I played on that one table. Well, they had to move it. Yeah. The one table that was there. I played there. It'd be like, what'd you get? I got a free falafel wrap. Oh, no, not the Subway falafel. Oh, no.
They gave me their coffee machine because apparently it hasn't worked in 40 years. Have you ever gotten coffee at Subway?
Oh, holy, it's so shit. Raunchy. Yeah,
I remember asking, like, do you guys even have coffee? And like, people started popping up out of the corners like, oh, yeah, you want one? I was like, oh, shit, this is going to be bad. Yeah.
They like plug it in the back. It's like, it's like, is it supposed to make that noise? It's like,
people were so happy. They wanted to see how this thing worked.
Well, I mean, but yeah, like regardless, you know, we need to, as musicians, be able to give back and show people why music is important, not only for vibe and ambiance, but also because we bring people through the door and people want to see us. So we have to do our job promoting ourselves, just like we've been doing in this period, and bring that to other venues. And if you're not interested in that, then we can continue to make our own venues and maybe, like, you know, pool with other musicians. And this is something we can do an episode about. Get a show together. We've talked about this in passing, but, you know, get a few artists that you can all have, you all have different draws, and just rent out a space or a loft or something for a night, or, you know, whatever, or do house concerts. But I mean, all this stuff is still about you bringing people through, because if you're renting a space, you're the one, your ass is on the line for that rent if no one comes. So it's really, it dependent. However you can make the most money, you make it work. And on that note, I think we've said enough.
Yeah.
All right. Rock on.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.